defense attorneys say one of the suspects in the murder of a Montana school teacher should not get the death penalty if he's convicted. Good evening, I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Yelvitich, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry tells us about the problems facing Glacier Park because of its popularity. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with Missoula Mayor John Engen about Missoula's crackdown on fireworks. Before we get to that first story, we have some breaking news. Missoula police have made an arrest in connection with a fire that broke out last Thursday at the Vantage Villa apartment complex. No one was injured in the fire, but there was significant damage, displacing all of the elderly and disabled residents. Missoula Fire Marshal Gordy Hughes says one of the tenants has been arrested and will be charged with arson and or criminal endangerment. Hughes would not disclose the tenant's name or the exact cause of the fire, except to confirm the fire started in one of the apartments. He says more information will be released after tomorrow's arraignment of the suspect.
Defense attorneys are seeking to avoid the death penalty for one of two men charged in the killing of a Montana high school teacher because they say the suspect is mentally disabled. 24-year-old Michael Spell of Colorado faces charges including deliberate homicide for the alleged January 2012 kidnapping of murder of Sydney teacher Sherry Arnold. Defense attorney Al Avignon said today he's asked the court to rule Spell ineligible for execution under a 2002 U.S. Supreme Court ruling that outlawed capital punishment for the mentally disabled. Prosecutors have until August 21st to respond to the motion. Avignon also is seeking to have Spell's 2014 trial moved to Bozeman. He says widespread news coverage of Arnold's killing in the booming Bakken oil patch of Montana and North Dakota has biased potential jurors.
And in other news from around the state, Senator John Tester today proposed a long-shot constitutional amendment aiming at limiting the rights of corporations to spend in elections. The Democrat says the proposal to change the U.S. Constitution is a response to last year's voter-approved initiative that directed Montana's elected officials to push for such a change and declared that corporations are not people entitled to constitutional rights. The initiative got on the ballot amid backlash to the U.S. Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United decision that ruled a ban on some corporate spending in elections was an unconstitutional free speech restriction. Some politically minded groups have been organizing as corporations, which can face fewer campaign restrictions than traditional campaign operations. Tester says this constitutional amendment would fix that.
He basically said that corporations aren't people with this constitutional amendment, and I think that if we can get this across the finish line, and it is a long old haul, make no mistake about that, I think it would influence elections and preserve our democracy.
Constitutional amendments require two-thirds support in each chamber of Congress and ratification by three-fourths of state legislatures. There has not been a change to the Constitution in more than 20 years. Tester realizes it will not be easy, but he thinks support will grow.
What we've seen in the last election cycle, particularly in Montana, was an unbelievable amount of outside dark money come in. Some of it was for my benefit, some of it was for my opponent's benefit, but the fact of the matter is that it allowed corporations to actually have more influence than people do. And as I said many times before, elections ought to be about people and their ideas, not corporations and their money. And what we saw last cycle was a whole lot of money being funneled into the state of Montana to try to twist our elections. And I think that's a problem that we need to work a solution to fix.
Representative Steve Dane's office says the freshman Republican has serious concerns about the bill. Spokeswoman Allie Lockman says the congressman worries about the effects on family farms organized as corporations and whether such a change could strip constitutional eminent domain protections. Tester says there are safeguards in the amendment that state the change does not affect individual freedom of speech, the press, religion, association, and other rights. Campaign finance reform advocates who helped push Montana's ballot initiative by railing against the influence of so-called dark money welcomed Tester's proposal. So did U.S. Senator Max Baucus, who since 2010 has proposed an amendment that would also overturn the Citizens United decision.
The Interior Department says it is ready to start a program to help Native American tribes buy parcels of reservation land that have accumulated multiple owners. The purchases announced today are part of the settlement of the Coble lawsuit over government mismanagement of Indian land royalties. Outgoing Interior Deputy Secretary David Hayes says purchase offers should begin at the end of the year and speed up in coming years. The program will start with the Pine Ridge, South Dakota, Crow, Montana, and McCall, Washington reservations, and the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate of South Dakota tribe, and involve 10 to 12 tribes by year's end. Allotting reservation land to individual tribe members who passed it to heirs was once a government method for assimilating American Indians. Some parcels now have thousands of owners.
The chancellor at Montana State University Northern is recommending that 25 of its programs be ended or placed under moratorium, meaning admission into those programs is temporarily suspended. Faculty and staff started in September reviewing all 74 programs offered at Northern. Chancellor James Limbaugh last week recommended growing 19 programs, maintaining 25, reducing or integrating 4 into other programs, and placing a moratorium on or ending 25 programs. The most debated of the recommendations is ending the secondary education major for students who want to teach high school math, English, and science due to decreasing enrollment. Limbaugh says the review focused on growing areas with increasing interest or job potential, such as the new criminal justice degree, nursing, civil technology, and the diesel, automotive, and farm technology programs.
The two-year Bitterroot College, University of Montana in Hamilton is officially unveiling its name and new logo at this hour. The logo features a pink Bitterroot flower with the college's name. Over 200 students now attend the college, one of 7 two-year colleges in the state, which combined have seen a 12% enrollment increase in the last 3 years, according to the Deputy Commissioner for Two-Year and Community College Education, John Seck. Seck believes the rebranding of Bitterroot College will contribute to that growth.
We're really excited about this because it's an opportunity to share the vision for the college and the commitment Board of Regents, the Montana University System, and the University of Montana have in serving the educational needs of the Bitterroot Valley.
We'll have a feature interview with John Seck about the growing importance of Montana's two-year colleges tomorrow during Montana Evening Edition.
A Lewis and Clark County Sheriff's Office Review Board found a deputy was justified in using a deadly force last month when confronted by an armed man in the valley north of East Helena. Sheriff Leo Dutton said yesterday that Deputy Matthew Rygaard has returned to work. Rygaard was placed on paid administrative leave after the May 29th shooting of 62-year-old Douglas Francis Harper, who was wanted on an arson charge in Musselshell County. An investigation found Harper had expressed suicidal thoughts a few weeks earlier, and officers were performing a welfare check when Harper pointed a handgun at the deputy. Dutton says Harper did not comply with the orders to drop his weapon, and Rygaard fired his. Dutton says a review of the department's use of force policy and in-car video found no policy violations.
A Great Falls woman is charged with aggravated DUI after police say she was driving drunk at a fast food drive-thru with her neighbor's young children in the car. The Great Falls Tribune reports 43-year-old Stacy Dawn Rattray also was cited Sunday with felony driving under the influence and 2 counts of endangering the welfare of children. She made an initial appearance in district court yesterday and was released after posting a $10,000 bond. Court records say Rattray's blood alcohol level was 0.277, more than 3 times the limit of 0.08, in which a person is considered legally drunk. The girls in her car were 4 and 2. Rattray said they were her neighbor's children, but that she couldn't remember their mother's name. State Child Protective Services was notified.
State wildlife officials aren't sure what killed 3 bison that were found dead in the Yellowstone River, but they know it wasn't a virus spread by domestic sheep. The Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks announced today that tests on all 3 bison turned up negative for malignant catarrhal fever. FWP veterinarian Jennifer Ramsey says all 3 animals found in mid-May showed signs of physical trauma. 2 had fractured pelvises and 1 had crushed ribs. Ramsey says the injuries could have occurred if the animals were swept away when the river was swollen with spring runoff. The bison were tested out of concern that they may have been sickened by a virus after a rancher introduced about 30 domestic sheep to property that borders the Yellowstone River near Gardner.
Visitation is up in Glacier National Park, and it's showing at trailheads, parking lots, and in the lack of bathrooms. The park is starting to a public scoping effort to manage the busy corridor of the Going to the Sun Highway and the trails connected to the famous road. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on what the management is planning, is looking to do, and the role the public plays in the process.
Glacier Park's Chief of Planning and Compliance, Mary Riddle, says the park is becoming more and more popular, with millions of visitors each year. For some perspective, Montana's population just recently crested 1 million people.
We're continuing to see a trend towards increasing visitation. In 2012, we had 2.1, and visitors are encountering congested, crowded conditions on a number of the trails.
Riddle says the Avalanche Trail on the west side of the park has seen a 250% increase in foot traffic since 1988. She says resource damage and wildlife conflicts are occurring, and human waste is an issue at some spots because of the number of people and the lack of restrooms. The park is working on a road corridor management plan to address some of these issues. The corridor is the Going to the Sun Road and the trails connected to the road.
95% of the park is recommended wilderness, and with increasing use, that wilderness experience is being changed.
Another issue the park is looking for input on is what to do with the shuttle system. The shuttle buses came online in 2007 to offset traffic congestion, while the Going to the Sun Road rehabilitation construction slowed or halted traffic. The park projects rehabilitation will wrap up by 2017. Riddle says the park used money from the rehabilitation project to buy the shuttles, and $7.50 of each entrance fee covers operation costs. But there's no money to replace buses. Riddle says she doesn't know what's happening next with the shuttles.
We want to explore alternatives to provide a sustainable shuttle system and explore alternatives to manage the visitor use on the road and on the adjacent trails.
The shuttles differ from the red buses, which one of the park concessionaires operates as tour buses. Riddle says they want to craft a flexible plan. For example, one possibility to reduce congestion on popular trails might be to direct people to certain trails at particular times to help spread people out, and then to drop any timing restrictions when the park is less busy.
It's an opportunity to be thoughtful about what we want the future of the visitor experience and resources to be on the Going to the Sun Road and within the adjacent on the adjacent trails.
The park is hosting public meetings next week in Kalispell, Missoula, Great Falls, and in Waterton, Alberta. There's a list of the public meeting schedule on Montana Public Radio's website at mtpr.org. The meetings are open house style with the public welcome from 4 to 7. The park is also collecting public input within its borders at the APGAR Transit Center, Logan Pass, and St. Mary's Visitor Center, July 19th and August 9th. Comment is due by September 6th, and the park hopes to have a draft plan out for review by next summer. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
An official with the Army Corps of Engineers told a congressional committee today it doesn't plan a broad environmental study on exporting coal from the western United States. Environmentalists and elected officials in Washington, Oregon, and Montana have called on the federal government to look at the cumulative effects of shipping millions of tons of coal via train from Montana and Wyoming to ports on the West Coast. They worry about increasing pollution from coal dust, traffic congestion, and climate change impacts from burning the fuel. The agency previously decided to do more limited studies at two ports in Washington State, Gateway Pacific Terminal near Bellingham, and Millennium Bulk Terminal at Longview. Federal officials have not decided whether to do a study on a terminal at Port of Morrow, Oregon.
When it comes to fireworks, there doesn't seem to be lots of middle ground. You either love them or be quite pleased if you never heard or saw one again in your life. The Missoula City Council this week made a decision that supporters say will put some teeth into the city's existing fireworks ordinance. Opponents are crying foul. In short, if city residents get caught with firecrackers this year, they'll pay a fairly steep fine. Edward O'Brien is more with Missoula Mayor John Engen, who says the council didn't make many significant changes to the existing ordinance.
A lot of it was clarifying language and ensuring that we were more in line with state law The significant piece of news here, I think, Ed, is that we have authorized firefighters to issue citations in the case of violations of the fireworks ordinance. So our firefighters who will be on duty and patrolling along with police on the 4th of July and on either side of that date will have the ability to cite folks who are in violation of the ordinance.
What's prompted all of this?
You know, I mean, it's interesting. Over the course of my services as mayor, I think folks have become sort of increasingly frustrated with our lack of enforcement. And that lack of enforcement has, in some ways, was in response to a lack of interest, as it were, on the part of council and some folks in the community to really do much. But over the course of the last several years, folks have become, I think, more and more concerned about enforcement and have an expectation that we'll actually enforce the ordinance. And so we're engaging in that activity this year. We'll be enforcing the ordinance. That'll be challenging on a number of fronts. There are folks who are certainly going to be disappointed that we're enforcing the ordinance, but I think my sense of the community will is that they'd like to have more controls over the use of fireworks and the noise that's associated with it and the consequences, and we'll see how it plays out.
Is it just the noise? Are we talking about pet trauma as well, air quality issues associated with the gunpowder?
You know, there are a number of things. There are air quality issues, there are safety issues, there are noise issues, and some of the noise, frankly, affects human beings as much as it affects pets. And, you know, I think all those things combine in a way that suggests in a city like Missoula, Montana today, blowing up ordnance in an urban setting is not the most appropriate activity anymore.
This is being described as zero tolerance. That's pretty line in the sand language.
Well, you know, and really that's what the community and council have asked us to do. There's not a lot of ambiguity here. I mean, you're either in compliance with the ordinance or you're not. And this is a case where council isn't particularly interested in us exercising discretion, which we have done over the course of the last number of years. You know, it's all been generally complaint driven, and you know, we've heard on the side of offering warnings in the past, and that strategy has led to what I think folks believe is an escalation in the use of fireworks. So this year I appreciate all the public education we can get out there. We're not interested in citing folks, but we will cite folks. Our goal isn't to issue citations, but if you're in violation of the law and we get a complaint or we witness you in action, we're going to have to respond.
Are some fireworks okay? Are sparklers okay? Are those little black snakes okay?
The ordinance calls out the fireworks. In fact, there was an effort last night to suggest that sparklers could be okay. What's in place today, another distinction I'll draw, is what's in place today is an emergency ordinance, and then council is actually going to consider a longer-term ordinance where they may actually consider allowing sparklers or other types of fireworks that don't make noise, etc.
This does not affect professional displays, right?
Correct. Professional displays are, there are a number of regulations that govern those displays, and folks can certainly continue to enjoy those on the 4th of July because they'll be going on.
I understand an idea was kicked around to open up designated times, windows, as it were, to set off fireworks, but that didn't fly. How come?
Boy, you know, anecdotally, we did some investigating in other communities where they've engaged in that sort of one-day free-for-all, and it sounded to us like it caused more harm than good.
And as you have already mentioned and well know, this is making some people very unhappy. They're saying fireworks are as old as America itself, and banning them shows zero tolerance for people who wish to use them, have fun with them, and express their patriotism.
You know, there are lots of places outside the city limits where folks can still express themselves with the use of fireworks. Those opportunities will continue to exist, and there are plenty of ways to express our appreciation for our independence in other ways. And, you know, in this representative republic of ours, part of the puzzle here is having a majority make some rules. And in this case, the majority has done that. I mean, it's interesting. Last night at our public hearing regarding this issue, we had two folks speak. One is a citizen of Missoula. One lives outside of the city of Missoula and sells fireworks. And they both spoke in opposition.
Oh, really? And that was actually my next question. How does this affect operators of those fireworks stands? Are those allowed in Missoula city limits to begin with or not?
Yeah, they're allowed in pockets of the county that exists in the city. So, for example, Pink Grizzly operates within, it's an island within the city limits. So that's why Pink Grizzly operates there.
We'll see. And that does not affect their business, obviously, because they're in that pocket there.
Right, and you know, and the fireworks vendors get to sell whatever they're allowed by law to sell, and we're not affecting that at all.
And if you're found in violation, a first ticket will cost you what, and will there be a warning, or is it immediately?
You know, we're back to that notion of zero tolerance, and council has asked that we not use discretion. So if you violate the law and you're caught, you're going to get a citation for $100. And a second offense would be, I think the number is $350 off the top of my head.
Man, that's pretty stiff, huh?
It is. I think the sense here is that we want to be serious about it.
I would also imagine this campaign is going to cost the city police department a lot in both human resources and overtime.
You know, we're going to spend some money on overtime. I haven't looked at the numbers in a couple of weeks, but it's, I think, something on the order of $7,000 or something like that in overtime. And we've always spent money on a campaign around letting folks know that fireworks actually are illegal in the city of Missoula. And that's been more of an educational campaign. And this year we're making folks aware that they're not only illegal, but we're going to enforce the code.
Last question, Mr. Mayor. Do you know if any other communities in Montana have this sort of policy, or are we kind of paving the way here?
I actually don't know off the top of my head. I do know that other communities have tried the amnesty period, for example, with really mixed results. Each community is unique. The beauty of Missoula is that, among other things, we are a remarkably dog-friendly city, and folks care very much for their animals, and that is certainly one of the issues around fireworks and noise, and maybe other communities are in the same boat. I don't know, but we got to do what we got to do based on what we're hearing from the folks we serve. We hope it's easy for you to comply. Council will be considering a permanent ordinance, and there may be some opportunity there for compromise around fireworks or displays that don't make noise. So provided that they're not noisy and not jeopardizing anyone's safety, there may be some room to breathe there, and I think some council members might be interested in hearing about that.
And those deliberations are coming, what, mid-July, is that right?
That'd be my hunch, yeah.
John Engen, mayor of the city of Missoula, Montana, as always, sir, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed. Take care.
And in tonight's weather forecast, for west of the Continental Divide, tonight we'll have rain showers and some thunderstorms may produce damaging winds, large hail, and heavy rainfall. Lows will be in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Tomorrow, expect a slight chance of thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, small hail, and heavy rainfall. Highs in the high 60s. For central Montana, tonight calls for partly cloudy skies. Thunderstorms are likely in the evening. Some thunderstorms may produce strong winds, large hail, and frequent lightning in the evening. Lows 50 to 60 degrees with gusts up to 45 miles per hour in the evening. Tomorrow we'll have showers and thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may be severe with gusty winds, large hail, heavy rainfall, and lightning. Highs in 75 to 85 degrees. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly cloudy skies, a chance of thunderstorms through the night, and lows around 45 to 50 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy, rain showers likely, and a chance of thunderstorms. Highs will be in the upper 70s. And now for the editorial comments of Dan Gallagher.
This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint. Today's commentary is not really about the condition of America's veterans as much as it's about a condition in America today that should have veterans almost vitriolic and feeling a little used and abused. The condition is not wholly political, is larger than any single governmental agent or agency, and, although undertaken in the name of national security, undermines our security by undermining, violating, really, our individual liberties. And that's why I believe that the issue of governmental eavesdropping, cell phone snooping, and bullying by means of targeting political groups for excessive scrutiny is very much a veterans issue. Now, less than a month ago, Americans participated in Memorial Day ceremonies, honoring the memory and the selflessness of the million-plus Americans who have given their lives in combat. Last week, on Flag Day, we acknowledged the symbol of our nation, a banner whose colors all stand for the values so precious in our history: courage, sacrifice, and a dedication to truth, honor, and purity. And in a little more than 2 weeks, we will celebrate America's birthday, the date when a handful of brave, independent, and wise men and women committed to liberty and human rights adopted the birth certificate, so brilliantly crafted by Thomas Jefferson, and, believing humankind was endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, they pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor to the cause. For nearly 250 years, through wars and depressions and threats, we've committed ourselves to the principles for which these holidays exist. And millions upon millions of young American men and women have faced danger, and deprivation, and possible death in that effort. They are America's veterans. But now we learn that the assumption we grew up with as Americans is no longer viable, that we may not be secure in our person from our own government. Of course, I'm talking about the recent revelations that our government, in the guise of national security, has been keeping track of every phone call that any American may have made or be making. We're assured that the only purpose for this is to track possible fifth column enemies, not to check on good citizens. And we're told that what's being done is legal and constitutional. Of course, we're told that by a court that's comprised of appointed judges, meets in secrecy, and does not hear any arguments opposing the proposed privacy intrusions. The irony of the nation's FISA court is that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was proposed by people like Ted Kennedy, Birch Bayh, Daniel Inouye, Jake Garn, and even Strom Thurmond, and was signed by Jimmy Carter in 1978, and it was intended to put a check on government surveillance of our own people. Now the court created by that act is validating the very activities intended to be curtailed. Don't get me wrong. I know that strong measures are often required to combat dedicated enemies. Also, while I do believe that plots and schemes do exist, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, seeing fiendish maneuvering in every action with which I disagree. But this time, as was true with the Alien and Sedition Acts and McCarthyism, our government has gone too far, way too far. The danger of our government being able to spy on our citizens, what with cyber intelligence, drones, and growing paranoia about an elusive enemy, is more intimidating now than ever before. Now, some people use the hollow logic on this argument by wondering why some of us are so concerned, that if we're law-abiding citizens, we have no reason to fear. But I worry and am outraged at this Big Brother tactic for the most basic visceral reason: because our civil liberties come from God through our enlightened founding documents and thanks to the service and sacrifice of every American veteran throughout history. I don't care what the rationale. None of us should have to give away our freedom and our dignity by being strip-searched at an airport just to satisfy some people's paranoia on steroids. It's gotten ridiculous. Even children are having their scissors confiscated when boarding a plane lest they prove to be 6-year-old blonde blue-eyed terrorists. Spying, mistrust, violation of rights and dignity, that's not what this country or our principles are about. That's not what our historic rule of justice, fair play, and tolerance call out from us. This country's veterans should be livid at what's occurred. It's as if their service and their sacrifice and devotion to this land has been made a mockery. Thanks for fighting for individual liberties, but we're going to take a few of them away right now. In my September 25th, 2001 commentary, 2 weeks after 9/11, I warned that if we overreacted to that terrorist attack by indulging in what I called bubble patriotism, we would end up, or could end up at least, losing both lives and liberties. We can't let that happen. You know, Benjamin Franklin, at the time of this nation's beginning, was quoted as saying that those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Old Ben made pretty damn good sense. Americans' veterans have fought to make our nation secure, but more than that, they've fought to preserve and safeguard the freedoms, the liberties we inherited. A government spying on its citizens and violating the most sacred right to privacy, this is not what our veterans fought for, not what the honored dead gave their lives for. And this is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint.
Dan Gallagher is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.